No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry for life.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 86 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and then ask the question, should we stop eating at vegan restaurants that start serving meat? A nice short and sweet intro today.
No wrong sentences. Although perhaps incorrect, because if they start serving meat, are they a vegan restaurant anymore, Paul?
Ooh. Is this a if the tree falls in the woods type of question?
I have no idea. Before you ask me what we've been eating, Paul, I just want to let all of the beautiful Beardos out there know that next week we will be doing a film review, which is obviously a cause for celebration because we both love to do them. The film, I believe it's pronounced Oakjaw. It's coming out on Netflix today. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, June 28th, and that will be reviewed for next week. So if you got Netflix, go hit it up, give it a watch, and then you can join along with the conversation. And feel free to even send us your emails in advance so we could possibly include them in the review. So check out Oakjaw on Netflix, June 28th.
Heck yeah. So Andy, what have you been eating?
Well, I finally got a chance to check out Posion Lounge, which is up in Washington Heights in New York City. And it is a Dominican lounge, although they have cuisines from several parts of the world on the menu. They're mostly all about their alcoholic drinks, of which I do not participate. But the drinks that were consumed that I saw seemed to be very interesting. And all of the Yelp reviews that I read, everyone was like, the drinks are what you should come here for. And they had a salted air margarita, Paul.
I don't know what that means, Andy.
One of the ingredients was salted air. Do you have any guess as to what that might be?
Do they just go to the ocean with ocean like a beach with open jars and just kind of like bug catcher style, just like wave their jars in the air and then quickly cap them up and then I don't know. I have no idea.
Not too far from the truth. No, it is actually like a foam. It's some kind of salted foam that they put on top, and they decided to call it salted air. So,
you know that gross foamy stuff that kind of curls up at the end of the waves after they break. That's what's going in your drinks.
Mm-mm-mm. Delicious. Ocean scum, as they call it. But I have to say, the food was very delicious. Everything it had ranged from good to really, really good. Bordering on outstanding. The thing that I loved the most was the quibibi, which was polenta with butternut squash puree and marinated tofu and a tomato sofrito. I could have eaten so much of that. It's like tapas style, so smaller plates. I wish that I had ordered like five of them because it was just so delicious. So, and it is also the only all vegan eatery up in this part of the city. So it's cool to see it thriving up here.
Nice.
And then speaking of New York City, I was a vendor recently at the vegan market at the Market Hotel in Brooklyn. And Paul.
Yes, Andy.
Paul, you came too, didn't you?
I did. I was actually thinking to myself while you were talking right now, I was like, did I eat anything good in this past week? And then I totally remembered that I was up in Brooklyn.
Yes. So before I talk about the food, I want to thank the Beardos, Sue, Brittany, and Cassie for stopping by. They appeared while you were not there, Paul, but aww, thank you very much for coming by, picking up a sticker. I have to say, I love the New York City food vendor community, the friender community, Paul. Mm-hmm. There's just so many. It's like what I love about doing the vegan shop-ups and the vegan market is just because there's so many ultra-friendly people making really creative, interesting food, and everyone gets to kind of share and in what they're making and try everyone's stuff, and it's just a really cool atmosphere. And there was a couple vendors I hadn't had a chance to try before because I don't get into these things too often, as I'm often somewhere else in the country. But one that I am familiar with, and I believe we've talked about on the show before, is Vegicano.
Mm-hmm. I think we talked about them last week.
Yes. Well, you mentioned Rudy saving you by bringing you a drink at Vegan
yes.
Street Fair.
Yep.
Rudy, the best dressed of the food vendors, for sure.
Yeah. I had never had the food before, and I had it, and I think we had the same plate. Did you have plate number two, Andy?
I had plate number two.
And everything was delicious on it, but for me, there was these refried beans, and it's like, I've always enjoyed refried beans, but these refried beans, I have never tasted such good refried beans in my life, and I was like, my God, this is like what I've been missing in my life. It was so good.
I am surprised that you're not raving about the 12-hour braised green chili seitan that, to me, was the star of the dish.
It was good. No, everything was good. And it was served everything was good. But that, Andy, that those refried beans, I can't stop thinking about them.
He's having dreams.
Yeah. Refried dreams.
Yeah. Hey-o. Well, I thought this seitan is the best seitan I've ever had.
Really?
I say that without hyperbole. I think it is incredible. He packs so much flavor into this seitan, and I just couldn't get enough of it. So props to Vegicano. Oh, yeah. I really need them to open up a physical location somewhere in the city so that it can be accessed more than just at these pop-up markets. But I always look forward to seeing whatever Rudy creates next.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul, did you get a chance to try those cauliflower poppers from Clean Meals?
Well, it's funny you asked that, Andy, because I watched as both you and our friends Josh and Steph ate them tenderly, and I was not offered any. So no, Andy, I did not. Poor old Paul was not offered any cauliflower poppers.
You got to seize the day, Paul, and jump in and get those poppers. They were fantastic. I think I was not expecting such a deliciously, perfectly fried piece of cauliflower at a pop-up shop, but it was so nice. It was not oily at all, and the sauces that they put on, they put two different sauces. One of them was almost like a sweet mustard. It was so good, and I cannot wait to try more from Clean Meals because I thought it was very delicious.
Wish I could have tried.
Maybe next time. Maybe next time, Paul. And then the last vendor I'll mention is Bunny Treats, who was at the Tri-State Veg Fest the day before with me as well. But lines were quite long. I didn't get a chance to try their creations. And this time I did. And there was this chocolate chip walnut cookie pie with like a graham cracker crust that was marvelous. It was very tasty. So New York is really, really crushing it in the vendor scene. All the people doing the pop-up markets, they got some really interesting stuff going on there.
Heck yeah.
Did you try anything else that you wanted to mention?
It was good. Like you said before, it was good to see a lot of the vendors that I see. Like for me, I see a lot of these vendors all the time because I'm only really doing events in this area, but it was always good to see V-Marks the Shop and Gonpai and Fanciful Fox. And I did get some goodies from Gonpai, some Gonpai goodies, if you will. And then I actually went to Dunwell Donuts for the first time in a while. And I wish I could have a Dottie's Donut and a Dunwell Donut next to each other to decide which one I like better, because I'm not sure, Andy. I'm just not sure. So let's move on then into our news.
Yeah, we have some late breaking news. This actually came in like 10 minutes before we started to record, and that is that New York City bans the use of wild animals in circuses. So this like just happened. There's not a lot of, at this time of recording, not a lot of articles to find, but I did find a post at the old Humane Society blog, and it just says, following the lead of Los Angeles, which took the same action 2 months ago, the New York City Council, the lawmaking body for the city of New York's 8 million residents, voted today to ban wild animal acts in circuses after a one-year phase-in. The New York City Council embraced the policy in a commanding vote of 43-6, and Mayor Bill de Blasio, a staunch animal advocate, says he looks forward to signing this legislation.
A staunch animal advocate.
You know, that's a bold claim for someone that hasn't ended the horse carriage trade in New York City yet.
I mean, has he done any other like animal advocacy type things?
Don't ask me questions I don't know the answer to, Paul.
I thought you were going to say something like, you don't want to dig in places that you don't want to know what happens. Some ominous thing. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess this is a good thing. It seems like circuses are really taking the hit, which I guess is good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just is like, hey, you got to adapt. You got to start following that Cirque du Soleil model. Mm-hmm. Maybe get into some magic.
Oh, I would like that.
That would please me greatly. So yeah, let's move on into some not as late breaking news. Paul, you found a couple of interesting news items, some that I've seen swirling the blogosphere. And hit us with that first one.
So this is actually one that I found out about it because some of my coworkers, my non-vegan coworkers, were talking about this, which again, we'll talk about why that might be, what the effects of that might be, or the implications of that might be. But this one is coming to us from WKBW.com. Vegan diet leads to infant's death, parents convicted. A judge in Belgium has convicted the parents of a seven-month-old boy who died of malnutrition after he was fed a vegan diet. The boy's parents were sentenced to a suspended six-month prison sentence Wednesday for unintentionally causing the child's death. The boy's parents aren't the only ones to face legal trouble after putting their infant children on a vegan diet. According to Broadly, an Italian father took his child's mother to court after she forced her children to eat vegan in May 2015, and two other parents lost custody of their child in 2014 after forcing the child to eat vegan. So one of the main reasons I bring this up is because, kind of like I alluded to, this, every time a story like this comes to light where it's like, oh, a vegan child dying from malnutrition, I think a lot of people, like my coworkers, not them specifically, but just people in general, are quick to condemn veganism because of this. When and I know we've discussed this kind of idea before, but I mean, it's very unfortunate and horrible, but there are many more children dying from under or malnutrition in the world who aren't vegan, and that are vegan. But we looked at a few different sources to try and figure out the exact number of children that were dying from undernutrition, and we got some conflicting answers, but it was definitely in the millions, which is obviously horrible. But again, it's like anytime it's caused by like a vegan diet, it's kind of highlighted versus the millions of other children that are dying.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation indeed.
But how do you think, Andy, if one of your coworkers or something brought this up, you would respond? Because I feel like it's disheartening to say like, well, what about all the other millions of children that are dying?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's almost like when people are like, well, what about all these other problems? You silly vegans, why are you focusing on animals? You know, so it's like you're dismissing the actual issue. But I think basically it's important to say this comes down to parents that were uneducated about nutrition or were following some weird fringe diet that's not necessarily vegan, because veganism isn't one specific diet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously, even if you look at like broad categories of like junk food vegan, whole food plant-based, raw till 4, like whatever it is, like there's so many ways to do vegan. And often you see these cases, you look at the headline, you're like, oh wow, that's horrible, that's so inflammatory. And then you like dig in and you're like, oh, these parents thought they could only feed their child rice milk for the beginning stages of their life. And, you know, parents that weren't really making sure the children got what they needed. And, you know, so you can say, listen, there's tons of healthy vegan babies out there. And, you know, this specific case, the fact that we've seen like five, you know, in the last like 4 years or so, if I'm like just sort of doing a very loose count at the top of my head, and it's like, is it really that big of a problem if we've only seen this small amount of, you know, of infants dying? And obviously doesn't make it any less tragic, but I think, you know, you have to put it into perspective that this is something that is happening because of parents following some kind of fringe set of beliefs about what their child can have. And like, you know, when you dig into this specific story, they were just feeding their child like oat milk and rice milk and hemp milk. And, you know, like human breast milk is designed to contain everything that like a baby needs to grow into a fully functioning human, as every species milk is designed specifically for their species. And rice milk is not designed to do that. You know, it's going to give you some nutrition. It's going to give you something to pour on your cereal, but it's not designed to replace human breast milk or even like an infant formula.
Mm-hmm. And I think in this specific case too, they like never took the child to a doctor or anything like that, which I think is also not good. And especially if you are doing something like this kind of alternative milk, I mean, it would be good to take the child to a doctor to like get whatever tests done to make sure that they're getting the nutrients that they need.
Yeah. And so something that I found really interesting about this particular story, Paul, mm-hmm. when I was trying to find a little more information about it, I found that, so this conviction just happened now, but it was a month ago that the death of this infant was announced. And almost every single article that mentions it doesn't mention a vegan diet. They mention a gluten-free diet. And So we'll post some links to some of those. But, you know, 7-month-old dies after being fed gluten-free diet, which included quinoa milk. That type of headline is typical of the articles that were coming out around that time. I even found one from the dailymeal.com that says, infant dies after religious parents feed him a gluten-free diet. So it's unfortunate that these incidents act as a way for people to tear down any specific thing. You know, so it's like people are like, oh, we realized that all of these plant milks were gluten-free, so we're going to go after a gluten-free diet. And to be fair, it does say the parents are quoted as saying that they believe their child had a gluten intolerance and that their child had a lactose intolerance. So I haven't seen a single thing from any of the parents where they're quoted as saying that they were vegan and feeding them on a vegan diet. Yeah. And that could very well be the case. It said that they run a health food store in their town, but I haven't seen a single thing from the parents saying that, you know, we are dedicated to not harming animals, and because of that, we fed our child these particular foods. So, you know, it's important when you see these things to kind of really dig in. And when you see your coworkers or family members posting these things, to examine, like, what exactly was this child being fed? And are the parents actually saying that they're feeding their child a vegan diet? In this case, that is not the case.
And, I mean, I think it would also be important to kind of point out to them what a lot of these articles are trying to do, which is, you know, like, I don't know if scapegoat is the right word, but they're trying to put the blame on something, put the blame on some word or some idea or some identity, because that's what people want to do, is people want to see something and be able to kind of like blame one thing for whatever the terrible thing that happened was. Because I think it's just easier for our brains to kind of process like, oh, this awful thing happened. Now tell me what is the cause of this? And if you can give me a one word phrase or a two word phrase, then that's going to be the easiest for my brain to process. So like, oh, vegan diet, cool, I'm going to blame that. Or gluten-free diet, cool, I'm going to blame that.
Yeah. And I think also these stories function to, you know, slander veganism. You know, veganism is certainly a favorite punching bag of a lot of people. And so this is just like another like, these vegans don't know what they're doing at all. Yeah. And they're killing their babies. And I got into a conversation with someone recently that was like, veganism is child abuse because, growing children need the animal fat for their developing brains and all this stuff. And if you go to a doctor and tell them you're feeding your child vegan, they're going to be really mad at you. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, it's the position of the the Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition that a properly planned, purely vegan diet is appropriate for all stages of life, from infancy to old age, pregnancy, etc. But, you know, even having that big stamp of approval from the largest collection of diet and nutrition professionals in the country, you know, people still just latch on to these headlines and they think, oh my God, veganism is going to kill a child. And if it's going to kill a child, what's it going to do to me? And so it just serves as like a reason for people to continue exploiting animals when they see articles like this posted around.
And I mean, think about other kind of cultures or religions that are very either vegetarian or vegan centric, and it's like, it's not like, I mean, they exist, so that should tell you that it is possible to raise an infant without meat.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, if you see your coworkers posting that shit, shut it down.
Shut it down. Shut that shit down.
All right, let's move along into this next little event that you found. Paul, tell us about it.
So this is the Mercy for Animals Hidden Heroes Gala. And I don't know too much about this event, but one thing about it in particular kind of caught my attention. So I'll get to that in a little bit. But here's a little description of the event from the website. Mercy for Animals invites you to join us on September 23rd, 2017 for our third annual Hidden Heroes Gala, a moving celebration of our brave undercover investigators and their incredible supporters. Held once again at the gorgeous Viviana in downtown Los Angeles, this black tie event will touch and inspire you. Enjoy an exciting blue carpet reception with celebrities, a silent auction, vegan appetizers, and more under the tranquil Southern California sky. Then step inside for a gourmet vegan dinner and a celebrity-studded awards show. The after party under the stars will be rocking again this year, so bring your dancing shoes. And it says star-studded, but you might ask yourself, is this vegan event really going to be star-studded? And possibly for the first time I've asked myself that question, the answer is yes. There are actually a decent amount of celebrities, such as Pamela Anderson, which is probably no surprise to people, Alec Baldwin, James Cromwell, Kat Von D, Emily Deschanel, Andy's good friend Tony Kanal, Moby, Russell Simmons, Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know why I had trouble saying his name, and many others. So it's actually a surprising number of, you know, A or B list celebrities, and. Or maybe some C-list celebrities as well. But that is not the thing. Was that?
Damn.
But that, shade. I'm not going to point names. But that is not the thing that caught my attention, my dear Andy. The thing that caught my attention was that when I went over to see how much it might cost to purchase a ticket to said event, the tickets range from $395 to $25,000, which is a whopping amount of money for a 3.5 hour event. Excuse me, 4.5 hour event. So yeah, I don't know how much there is to say about this except to kind of highlight the extreme inaccessibility of this event, seeing as the cheapest table, the general admission, is the $395 ticket. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different levels of pricing. So it's $395, $750, $5,000, $7,500, $10,000, and then the $25,000 table. That is the most expensive, which I imagine Alec Baldwin and Joaquin Phoenix will be sitting at. You still there, Andy?
I'm sorry. I just came back from the dead. I just died from the sticker shock of that expensive ticket.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, it's the event is to kind of the purpose of the event, as they say, is to highlight the people who are doing the undercover investigations. But I imagine they are making an extraordinary amount of money that is probably not going to those people as much as it's just going to Mercy for Animals in general.
Yeah, so Paul, you wanted to include this, and you mentioned that you thought it was like a very inaccessible event, of mm-hmm. which I would agree. And I guess my question to you is that necessarily a bad thing?
I don't know. I mean, I guess if this is probably a ridiculously good fundraiser for them, but I mean, if you show this to, I don't think showing this event to people is going to bring about any, it's not going to convince anyone to want to go vegan if they see that this is what they're going to have to pay to attend vegan events.
But that's what people would have to pay to attend any big event with lots of celebrities. And it's like this exclusive thing.
I guess this isn't really my, you know, I don't, I don't attend many of these types of events, Andy.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that the purpose of this event is to make new vegans necessarily. I think it's just to raise money and make those who are doing these investigations and have probably been out of contact with friends and family, or, you know, not in their regular normal life for a long period of time to make them feel like what they did was worth it. So I guess, I don't know, normally I'm one to rail against things that are super inaccessible. And, I, you know, a conversation about whether or not we think what MFA does is helpful for animals or not could be another topic. But I don't know if I really see anything wrong with this.
I don't know if there's really much else to say about it. I think it's kind of, I'm not super into it, but then again, like you said, I mean, most of these star-studded charity events probably are this amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a lot to be said about the nature of the nonprofit industrial complex and this whole cycle that like feeds on itself, and they need all this money. And, you know, in theory, this money is being made so they can go then spend it on things that will help to make new vegans.
Yeah.
So one could look at it as a good thing in that regard. But also, I certainly don't think it necessarily helps with the image of veganism being for these rich, white, elite people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much the average person out there is aware that this event is going to happen, you know. And also, but then you're like, okay, well, is this actually going to help other celebrities want to go vegan because they want to be included in this type of event and get some notoriety and fame from that? And then is that good because they have a much bigger platform for promoting veganism than you know, the average, you know, person that isn't famous does? So I don't know how to weigh out the pros and cons of this whole thing.
I feel you. And I mean, you know, as usual, I feel like we try to quantify things a lot, but maybe it's just not quantifiable.
Well, I want you to quantify it, damn it, Paul.
So yeah, that's that.
are you telling me that if you had millions of dollars, you wouldn't, and you were like someone that wanted to help animals, you wouldn't be like, whatever, I'll drop 25 grand and help out this organization, I get to go hang out with Tony Canal?
I guess if 25 grand was like $25 to me, then maybe yes.
Yeah. And like, that's who these things are there for. They're there for the people that can afford to drop those things.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like, say, the Animal Rights Conference, which isn't necessarily the most accessible thing, although they do make steps to try and make it affordable for certain people. But even if you get a cheap ticket, there's still hotel rooms and travel and all that stuff. But, you know, they have this gala every year. They have this banquet dinner every year where they do an auction, and, you know, that's where they get like big donors to drop a lot of money. But it's really, you know, it's a room full of activists, and, you know, the nonprofit world doesn't pay very much. So it's a lot of people sitting around being asked to pay $1,000 for a bottle of champagne when really there's only like 10 people in the room that could actually afford that.
Yeah.
And it's really just kind of, you get the feeling it's just sort of this public showing so that these people can show off how generous they are publicly, you know? And so in that setting, it feels like it's not the most appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, and whereas this is like, here's a bunch of rich people getting together, and you know, and you're not a part of the club anyway because you can't afford to spend, you know, a week's salary or more, you know, on a ticket to get in for a general admission table.
Yeah. All right, let's move on into our discussion of the week.
Let's do it.
So the topic of the week is, should we stop going to vegan restaurants that start serving meat? And Andy, you brought this one up. What was the what spurred this?
Well, so this just popped up. This is actually a very new article that came out, and I believe this change is happening today at a restaurant called Irvin, which is in Santa Monica, California, in the LA area, and one that I actually reviewed on the show a while back, a couple months ago. And I guess we can talk about what I thought of the food a little bit later on, but this article is all about Nick Irvin, the namesake of the restaurant, and why this restaurant is going to start serving meat. So, reading from this article from LAWeekly.com, "When we opened the place, we were hoping to bring vegan and non-vegan diners together, Irvin told me last week by phone. For a chef, it can be exciting to put yourself in a box. But as of today, the chef is breaking out of that box. While some of Irvin's most popular dishes will remain on the menu and remain meat-free, there will now be meat and seafood dishes as well. So why the change? Irvin admits the restaurant isn't as busy as he'd like it to be, but creatively, he'd hit a bit of a wall. It's hard to be anything more than, quote, I'm a vegan chef. It's pretty limiting. I found myself wanting to do more. He says that putting his name on the restaurant when he himself isn't vegan also ended up feeling a little false. And then the article goes on to describe some of the new menu items, include salmon and like fried chicken thighs, and then says, Irvin hopes the mixed menu will help achieve his original goal of bringing both meat eaters and non-meat eaters together, and he hopes it will bring him back to a less ego-driven form of cooking. We were losing the fun of the whole thing, he says. We were becoming slightly snotty, like, look how badass we are. It's been humbling to find out how hard it is to be badass without the tools you're used to. I want to get back to the fun of cooking. So I want to talk about this specific instance and this specific reasoning, and then I'd like to open up into a broader discussion about vegan restaurants that start serving non-vegan food. I know that we have talked about some in the past. I'm forgetting names. I know I'm also thinking about our discussion about Cafe Gratitude and mm-hmm. how it was learned that the owners, while not serving, they didn't start serving non-vegan food at their restaurant. They started killing or paying to have the animals killed that were on their farm. And that was a big hubbub. And I feel like kind of falls into this category. So I think it'll be an interesting discussion and a really good kind of follow-up connective tissue to last week's episode. We were talking about how things should be labeled on the menu, you know, yeah. if they should have a vegan asterisk or if they should have their own separate menu or if there should be just they should be hidden in there because that kind of tricks people into trying them that aren't vegan. And actually, before we even get into it, someone on our Facebook page, apologies for forgetting the name right now, mentioned a restaurant, the Golden West in Baltimore, that does a combination of two options, Paul. They did, they have the non-vegan options in the menu with the little vegan symbol, and then you can ask for a separate vegan menu if That's you cool. want, that has all of those items, the vegan items, sorted out into its own separate sheet.
I think that's, I feel like, that's perfect.
I think that's the best.
Yeah,
that's the best.
Yeah, that's and absolutely the best.
I went to that restaurant with non-vegan friends, and they didn't know about the separate vegan menu, so I just ordered off their regular menu and got, like, vegan French toast, I think. So, you know, you still have to know that the vegan menu exists, but I think that's one of those things that if you're in the know, it is very helpful. So we'll add that as, like, option number six
yeah.
to our discussion from last week. So anyway, Paul.
Yes, Andy.
I went to this restaurant, gave it a review. I mm-hmm. tried a bunch of things. I think the only thing that I actually talked about were these grilled shishito peppers that were served on this miso butterscotch, and there was like rosemary granola on it. I thought it was a really interesting, unique flavor profile, even if it wasn't something that I would like want to go have like every day of my life, but it was still like, oh, what an interesting dining experience I just had.
Yeah.
I have to say that like almost everything else I ate there was just fine. It was like, okay, if this was the only option in town, I would come here and I'd be fine with it. But, you know, you're in LA and there's like a billion vegan restaurants everywhere, like yeah. roughly 1 billion last time I counted. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't like a place that I was like, oh, I'm going to go here all the time. But if I'm in the area, yeah, why not? I'll pop in. So I feel like he doesn't really directly say this, but it feels like he's kind of saying that not enough people were coming out to the restaurant. He's like, yeah, we weren't as busy as I'd like to be, but the real reason is the creativity. And so I think it's like, it's kind of saying like vegans don't come out as much or the food can't be as good because it's vegan. You know, I know, again, I don't think he's exactly saying that, but that's kind of the implication of that. And like, my feeling is, I don't think you're doing that well because the food's just not that amazing in a place where there is such amazing food all over the town.
Yeah, I'm sure you could find tons of very successful vegan restaurants, all vegan restaurants in LA.
Yeah, ridiculously successful restaurants in LA. And really, they should be doing great in Santa Monica because there's not too many other all-vegan eateries in the area.
Yeah.
There's one Thai place that I've been a few times, and it's always kind of mediocre. And then there's some places with vegan options. There's a veggie grill a couple miles away. But, like, really, they're kind of primed to be a great vegan hotspot. And I think that they just didn't pull it off. And like to be totally honest, I think that's why this restaurant is not doing as well as he would want to be. I am not, if they shut down, I wouldn't be sad about it kind of thing, but I'd be like, oh, bummer to lose a vegan restaurant, but I will live.
Mm-hmm. Also, can I say something about the idea of well, his quote of saying for a chef, it can be exciting to put yourself in a box. Isn't all restaurants as a chef putting yourself in a box? Because no restaurant is serving every single type of food. And like, if I went to some restaurant and it was like American food and I was like, okay, I can get hamburgers and hot dogs and pizza, but then all of a sudden they have like some random other dish like General Tso's tofu or something like that, I might be like, I don't know if that's going to be very good because it's like not going along with all the other stuff. And I mean, maybe it's delicious, but do you know what I mean? It's like every restaurant, not every restaurant, but most restaurants, they're like, this is a seafood place. This is an Indian restaurant. This is a Thai restaurant. It's like they're putting themselves in boxes like that. And that's not something that is like restrictive to them, because for each of those different cuisines, there's like an extraordinary amount of variety that they can be serving. So the idea to me of being like, oh, it's a vegan place, so it's like there wasn't enough fun, there wasn't enough variety, I feel like that's just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And when I think about any restaurant that I've been to that tries to do everything, and it's just like, it's like too much. You're like, what's your specialty? Give me a menu that has like 12 items on it that you do really well. Don't give me something that's 10 pages long and has the Italian section and then has like the Thai section and then has the seafood section. Like, no one wants that. It's overwhelming. It's too much to read. I love those like restaurant rescue type shows. And like anytime that one, like Gordon Ramsay goes into a restaurant that has 50 options on the menu, he pairs it down to like 15 things. And it's like, that is a box that you have put yourself in. And I think I've said this on the show before, but like to think about veganism in terms of being restrictive is like to think about your daily activities being restricted by the fact that you don't want to go out and murder people for fun. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, you're restricted a little bit because you can't just go out and kill people. Oh, I guess there's only 7 million other things you could do with your day. And yeah. I'm sorry you don't have 7 million and 5 things that you could do because you don't want to kill people. So it's like veganism's not restrictive in that regard. So yeah, I do think that that's kind of a silly reason. And it almost feels like this chef should just admit like they're maybe not vegan cooking is not their thing. But also, you know, if the chef isn't vegan, maybe he's not experimenting with stuff very often.
And you know, hey, chef, get good. Why don't you just get good at being vegan?
I hope he never listens.
No, but because like I can think about so many all vegan restaurants that are themselves like one specific type of cuisine, and that I think that would be considered like one very specific thing that are phenomenal. So it's like you don't need to be doing everything. I don't know. Like, I think of Blackbird. They have pizza and wings and sandwiches, and that's it. There's like 12 different things I can order, and I would be happy with those 12 things for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, and it feels like it's kind of a cop-out for a restaurant that's not doing that well because maybe the food isn't that great. I mean, like, vegans talk. Vegans love to Instagram their food. So if your food is good and you have a nice presentation and you're in LA, which has veg fests that bring out, you know, 30,000 people come to vegan street fair, like it shouldn't really be that much of a problem if you have really good food and you're in a good location.
Yeah. So, Andy, that being said, per our discussion last week, is this actually potentially a good thing for veganism overall, that they will now be serving non-vegan options, which will most likely bring in non-vegans?
Well, if they don't order a vegan dish, then no.
But
like Paul, are they going to come in and be like, oh, I'm going to go to this place because I can finally get some salmon?
No, but I mean, if they didn't know that this place existed beforehand, and now they heard about this place, because I'm assuming this guy is like a semi-famous chef, because I believe he owns a few restaurants, right?
The article mentions that he was a chef at least one other restaurant, and the person that was writing the article was a fan of his work from this other restaurant. And when Irvin originally opened, wrote a review that was like, some of the stuff's really good, but I would like to see what this chef can do if he wasn't so constrained.
Ah. Well, I don't know, because I was just thinking, like, if someone just found out about this restaurant and was like, oh, this, and didn't now know it as a vegan restaurant, that would they be more likely to go and then maybe experience some of the vegan options that will be nicely marked with an asterisk and a V. But I don't know. It just seems, even though our discussion last week seemed to indicate that option that was like, oh, let's have a vegan restaurant that has, you know, like mixed options, vegan and non-vegan, with like the clearly marked V or the asterisk on it. That was kind of like our takeaway for what might get more people to try veganism. Something just seems so like defeating about a vegan restaurant that then turns non-vegan.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's another thing that I think about is this, you know, should we be upset about this? Is it any morally different than if a restaurant started out as being non-vegan and had some vegan options that vegans went to? But yeah, it certainly feels different to have a restaurant that was all vegan and then they're like, nah, we're giving up on this.
And I think it might, you know, it could send a message to other chefs or just people in general that like, oh, being vegan, having an all vegan restaurant is too difficult. So it's like, we shouldn't have those, or other chefs that were thinking about that shouldn't do that. Although it is still weird that, I mean, I think it's something that makes this situation odd and different is that he himself is not vegan.
Yeah, that is curious. It makes me wonder what the motivation for opening it was. Like, was it just, I just want to try something new? Or was it, hey, veganism is really popular. 30,000 people come out to Vegan Street Fair and I want to get some of that money.
That sweet, sweet vegan money. You know where he should be going? That gala. Gala? How do you pronounce that word?
Gala.
Gala. Did I say gala the entire time?
I don't know. Oh, well. I'm sure you could say it either way.
Thanks, Andy.
Let me get a gala of milk.
I mean, it's like I'm happy that there was another all-vegan restaurant, because like we said last week, it's like all vegan restaurants certainly serve a specific purpose and they help to kind of show the changing of times and that vegan is becoming more accessible and that veganism is becoming more popular. It's like they certainly show that. So it's good that they're all vegan places. It's strange that this person is not vegan and doing this. But yeah, there is definitely something defeating about a vegan restaurant becoming non-vegan.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a bummer. And so then I guess the question is, like, is this still a restaurant? Like, should vegans avoid this restaurant? Should vegans still patronize this restaurant? Like, if it feels different, does it feel like it's time for a boycott or, you know, an informal boycott? Or is it just like, well, whatever, go there if you want?
Honestly, if it were me, if the food was good, I would probably still go there. If the food was okay, I would probably be like, nah. But then at the same time, it's like, do I want to show this one specific chef that it is possible to thrive on just a vegan restaurant? I don't know. I don't think that's going to get him necessarily any closer or less close to veganism.
Yeah. And, you know, but what if like all the vegans band together and decide to go there and obviously only purchase the vegan options? And it's like, okay, well, we added some chicken to the menu, but still people just want the vegan food. Maybe that would be like a positive affirmation for the chef.
But what if he just sees that as like, if he's not like doing the more, I don't know, if he's not doing the specific analysis or the detailed analysis and he just sees, oh, look, like my sales went up after I made this change. That means so I must be doing something right.
That's true. It's like you got to wait a while before you go back there.
I guess I wouldn't, like, personally, I wouldn't like boycott the restaurant. I don't think that's worth my time. But I guess I would utilize this if it meant that I could take non-vegans there now that wouldn't go there before and maybe prod them to try and try some of the vegan options.
But Paul, if they wouldn't go there before, like if like you're saying they would refuse to go there before, what would change about them being there? Obviously, they're not going to get a non-vegan dish if they would refuse to go there when it was vegan. Is the benefit that they're just going to see you getting something delicious and vegan?
I don't know, Andy. I didn't think that far ahead.
Like, it makes me think about when restaurants are all vegan, except they have, like, some cow milk cheese you can add to your burger, or they have some cow's milk that you can put into your coffee or something. It's like, who's refusing to go there unless they carry those things? Like, is it really such a significant portion of their patronage that they must have these things? Like, why not just get rid of them altogether?
Well, I do know of one location that's like that, that has the only non-vegan thing they serve is cow's milk, like on the side for coffee. And I've been told that, I do not know if this is true or not, but I've been told that the reason is because the location that they're in used to be like another kind of breakfasty type diner, non-vegan, and it was popular in the community. And when they made the switch over, people in the community were not pleased that they couldn't get their coffee with cow's milk.
And so you think that by offering that cow's milk, it allows them to stay open and continue to serve the rest of their vegan fare? It's kind of like a worthy trade-off?
I don't think it allows them to stay open. I'm sure that that patronage is not going to make or break them necessarily. I do think, though, that, I don't know, I'm not as against that if it means like the community of people that they're kind of plopping this restaurant down in is more accepting, and is more accepting of them and more willing to try the rest of their stuff. Because if people come in, and because this is a very, very tasty place, and if people are going in there, and yeah, they get the coffee with the cow's milk, but then they try some of the other stuff, if they maybe would not have gone in an all vegan place other than that, I think that that might be okay. And especially because it's kind of, I don't know, again, it's kind of like you are going into this other community. It's not like, this isn't necessarily when you first start this restaurant, this isn't your community. So I think it's important to have a good relationship with the community.
But consider this important point, Paul.
Important point, Paul, yes?
Fuck 'em.
But is that gonna really be the thing that gets them to consider veganism then? If the only kind of, if the thing that's to them represents veganism is like, oh, you destroyed this cherished staple of my day, and now you're just basically giving me a big fuck you.
Do they charge extra for the cow's milk?
I would guess not, because it's like off to the side with all the other milks.
Yeah, that would be an interesting strategy, is if they made it cheaper to get the vegan milk, and that would encourage people to try the vegan milk.
I would be down with that.
You know, obviously people would complain, because be like, well, why is cow's milk more expensive? But it's like, hey, welcome to bizarro world, because everywhere else it's more expensive to get the vegan milk.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
Yeah, no, I think that might be a good strategy. Yeah, I think I'm,
I don't know.
I'm sympathetic towards it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I guess it just feels like something that could be phased out over time.
Yeah.
You know, once people, like maybe like when they first start and there's like some huge uproar from the community, include it. And then after 6 months, you start to fade it out because people have tried the food, mm-hmm. and they realize the food is good and they don't just need that cow's milk. I don't know.
And maybe phasing it out, like people maybe wouldn't even notice, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe it would start off as, oh, we're out of it today. Guess you'll have to use some of this other milk. And then a couple weeks later, just stop buying it.
We ran out of it. And then we just decided to stay run out of it.
Yeah, we ran out of it permanently.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still feel like the restaurant should feel comfortable to just not offer the cow's milk.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I can sympathize both ways. And I definitely think if a vegan restaurant is going into a community, is trying to establish itself in a community, it's good to have a good relationship with that community.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I'm wondering if there's any other way to establish goodwill while still remaining true to your values and ethics.
Yeah, I think, like, again, if this story is true, I feel like the reason is because they kind of took over a different staple of that community, which I think is a different situation than someone else might be in if they're trying to open a vegan restaurant.
What if they went out and served vegan cookies with almond milk or something?
What? Why?
To like welcome themselves into the community, show people that almond milk isn't going to kill you and that it tastes pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. There are probably other things that maybe could have been tried. Maybe other things were tried, you know? Who knows? I don't.
Maybe they just gave up, Paul.
Maybe. But again, I'm willing to let that slide because the food is delicious.
Fair enough.
Well, Andy, I don't know if you told me necessarily your opinions about how vegans should as a whole should react to this kind of situation, whether it be boycotting or protesting against it or just going to the place and just ordering the vegan options like normal.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't make some big public stink about the whole thing. I wouldn't, like, if I was about to go out and do some sort of vegan education work, I wouldn't decide to then spend that time instead writing an angry Yelp review about the thing and making vegans look, you know, unreasonable. And I feel like whenever things like this happen, you see stories that are like vegan, formerly vegan cafe owners given death threats by vegans. It's like, obviously those are usually blown out of proportion, or it's just someone online that's like, I hope you die. It's like not really like a legitimate death threat, but obviously that still is going to affect someone. That sucks to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, I think for me, if I lived in LA, it'd be one of those things where I'd be like, that's a bummer. And I'm not going to go there unless it's super convenient for me, you know, but otherwise it's, you know, the food wasn't, in this particular instance, the food wasn't so amazing that I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'll put up with seeing some chicken carcass because I still really want to get those shishito peppers. You know, it's just like, whatever. It's fine. If I'm around there, I might go. But like overall, I think especially because it's not a vegan chef, like I feel like that changes things for me as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like some vegans that were like, we need to get by and we're going back on our ethics. This is just like someone that doesn't really seem to care about the ethics. They just want to try some new style of cooking, you know, cooking in a box. And it's like, I don't know. I guess it just shows that it's important to like really educate people on why they need to be vegan, because you have things like this happen where it's like, it's not working out and I'm constrained because I can't cook animal carcasses. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you.
Paul.
Yes, Andy.
If you had to make a prediction, do you think this restaurant will be open 2 years from now?
I don't know. I feel like the making it a non-vegan restaurant, I don't know how much that's going to help them. So I might say no. Not that I want to see some restaurant suffer, especially if it's offering vegan options, but I don't know. I think that if this person kind of can't get their act together as a vegan restaurant, I mean, maybe like they just stink at making vegan food and their non-vegan food is phenomenal, in which case maybe it will do well. But I would, if I had to make a guess, I would say no.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm thinking about, there's a restaurant in Chester, Connecticut called Six Main. Did you ever go there?
I don't think so.
I thought it was actually quite good, but it was sort of, not really near anything, and it was on the downtown strip, and I guess it was kind of a little bit of a foodie town, but they were all vegan. They actually had this General Tso's cauliflower that I thought was fantastic.
Ooh.
And they just weren't doing so well, so they decided to start serving fish on their menu to bring in more clientele, and turns out didn't bring in the clientele. You know, Ooh. like I wonder, and then they closed not too long after that. So I wonder if, you know, if this restaurant already has its reputation established, I feel like they're going to have to do a lot of PR to get people back on board with it if they haven't earned that goodwill in their local community yet.
Definitely. Ooh, talking about that community again, Andy.
Mm. I love that community. All right. Well, I guess we'll 2 years from now, we'll set a little reminder on our calendars to see if Urban is still open. Or maybe I'll check in when I get back out to L.A. this coming winter. So anyway, we want to know what all y'all out there, all you beautiful beardos, have to say about this. Do you have a restaurant in your community that was vegan and then decided to start serving non-vegan products? How did they fare? Let us know if they survived, if they did better afterwards. Would you still go to this restaurant even after they started to serve non-vegan foods? Let us know. We're always curious to hear. And you can send us an email about any old thing. It's thebeardvegans@gmail.com. We got the Facebook. We got the Instagram. Be sure to give us a follow there and rate and review us on iTunes.
Heck yeah. What do you got coming up, Andy?
July 5th through the 9th, Paul. I'm going to be at Vegetarian Summerfest in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Should be a fun one, camping out in the van for 5 days. It's a very long fest. July 22nd, I'll be at Compassion Fest in Hamden, Connecticut. And Yay. Hopefully, Paul, hopefully you'll make an appearance if you're not too busy packing up.
I believe I will.
Because we have learned that they're going to have both Yeah Dog and Like No Utter this year.
Very excited about that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see who else they get added to the lineup. And then the next day, July 23rd, I'll be at Vegan Pop-Up in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And Vegan Treats is going to be there, so that's Ooh. Really cool. August 3rd through the 6th, both Paul and I will be at the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C. And we got plenty more events going on August all the way through till November 11th in Atlanta. So be sure to go check out CompassionCo.com to get all the dates, deets, and links for those events and see what else is coming up in the rest of the year. Stop by the Compassion Company table. That is where I will be with your free button and or sticker.
Hell yeah.
And don't forget to check out Oakjaw on Netflix so you can listen to it in our review next week. Well, Paul, you know, we spent a little time talking about that gala with the very expensive tickets, you know, ranging all the way up to $25,000 for like the platinum table, whatever it is. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, some things in life are worth a lot of money, but some things, Paul, are priceless, including the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. And I wish I could have a Dottie's Donut and a Dunwell Donut next to each other to decide which one I like better, because I'm not sure, Andy. I'm just not sure.
I think, you know what? It's been a while. Maybe we need to make some sort of video, our first ever video where we do a taste test.
That would be also a very long trip, though, if we had to travel from Dottie's to Dunwell. Actually, well, no, I guess it'd only be like 2 hours.
When you move to Philly... You start in Philly with the Dotties. I started Brooklyn with the Dunwell, and we meet somewhere in the middle.
In New Jersey.
Yep. Ugh.
At the Vince Lombardi rest stop.
Party at the Barty. I'm sure
that
this
sounds
was
like a plan.
Thrilling listening. That one's for the bloopers.
All right. Bill de Blasio.
Is that your New York accent?
That's just, I don't know. I just like his name. According to Broadly, an Italian father took his child's mother to court. Let me say that again. According to Broadly, undernutrition causes 45% or start from when I finished reading like the end of the main article.
Yeah. Or why don't you start with what's up, beardos?
All right.
I thought it was like a really interesting, unique flavor. But consider this important God damn it.
You think Moby's going to be at the DC one?
VegFest?
No, the Animal Rights Conference.
Oh, I don't know. They haven't announced any of the celebrities yet.
Oh, I just meant like walking around.
Probably not, since he lives in LA.
Rats.
And he wasn't at the... Well, he wasn't walking around the LA one this year, but he was at the thing, the dinner.
He wasn't walking around. It paid off, that setup.
Did it, though?